Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, online fitness coach, nutritionist, and three-time best-selling author, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is with human behavior expert, Dr. John DeMartini. Dr. DeMartini is somebody I've been following for a long time, since 2015, when I heard him speak at the Pendulum Summit in Dublin, and have been following his work quite intensely ever since. When you listen to this podcast, this is one of the very few interviews where I really struggled and my brain struggled to keep up with Dr. DeMartini. He is, in my opinion, one of the smartest people on the planet and has an incredibly inspiring message and a way of seeing the world and approaching human behavior when it comes to keeping yourself inspired based on what it is you do. So this is a very inspiring and uplifting podcast. So without further ado, here is today's episode with human behavior expert, Dr. John DeMartini, on why inspiration is not motivation, how unrealistic expectations lead to frustration, and why your highest values lead to an inspiring life. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am delighted to be joined today with my guest, Dr. John DeMartini. Dr. DeMartini is a world-renowned human behavior expert, philosopher, and speaker. He has over four decades of research across multiple disciplines. His work has been described by students as the most comprehensive body of work, an extensive library of wisdom, and wisdom of the highest and most valuable order. He's an internationally published author, a global educator, and the founder of the DeMartini Method, a revolutionary tool in modern psychology. His education curriculum ranges from personal growth seminars to corporate empowering programs. He shares life, business, financial, relationship, and leadership empowerment strategies and empowerment tools that have stood the test of time. I'm looking forward to talking all things mindset and personal development in today's episode. Dr. DeMartini, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Dr. DeMartini, I've been following your stuff for ages. We spoke on Instagram, or I was speaking with Clarissa on Instagram, and I saw you at the Pendulum Summit. I think it was in 2015 or 2016, and you hooked me in your speaking, and I devoured all your books off the back of it and have been following your content ever since, and it's provided so much value in my life. So I'm really looking forward to chatting. But can you tell us, before we dive in to all the things that you do in terms of service for people, about your backstory and kind of what got you interested in studying human behavior?
Well, I had challenges as a child. I was born with an arm and leg deformity. I had speech impediment. I had dyslexia. My teacher actually put me in a dunce class. I had to wear a dunce cap. She told my parents, "I'm afraid your son's never going to be able to read, never be able to write, not be able to communicate effectively, never amount to anything, never go very far in life." Put him into sports because he likes to run. Because when I got out of braces, I wore braces till I was four. When I got out of braces, I just wanted to run. I end up going through school by asking the smartest kids questions, and I was able to get through elementary school, primary school, barely by that. My parents moved from Houston, Texas, to Richmond, Texas. We lived in a lower socioeconomic area there, and there were not a lot of smart kids, and I didn't have anybody to ask questions to, and I failed, and I dropped out and became a street kid. So I lived on the streets really from 13 to 18. I also learned how to surf when I was nine, and Texas wasn't the surf capital. So I thought, I need to go to California and Hawaii to go surfing. So at 14, I got my duffel bag, my surfboard, and I hitchhiked out to California, down into Mexico and Central America. I made it over to Hawaii at 15. I lived under a bridge first, and a park bench, and a bathroom, an abandoned car, a tent. I kept social climbing. And I started riding bigger waves. And I was in not the very top tier, but I was like in the second tier, and surfers, and rode big waves, 40-foot waves. I was doing pretty good there, except I wasn't taking care of my health, and I was expanding my consciousness through different means, which you did in the 60s and 70s. I ended up nearly dying of strychnine cyanide poisoning and almost died on a big wave. And that had a shift on my life. And I was unconscious for 3.5 days. And when I finally was taken out of that and woke up and was helped by a lady, she took me to a health food store, which led me to a yoga class, where I met a speaker named Paul C. Bragg, who one night in 1 hour with a message inspired me and made me believe by his speech that I could possibly overcome my learning problems someday, become intelligent, someday be able to read. And that was a, that was something I never thought was going to be possible. I never thought I was going to be intelligent. I mean, I could surf. I was that kind of intelligent, you know, kinesthetic intelligent, but not academic intelligent. And that was the beginning of a new trajectory. And that night I had such an epiphany and such a vision that I would become, you know, learned and be a teacher and travel the world and teach. Out of the blue, that came to me. That started an inspirational journey that I never stopped. And it's actually, this is the fifth decade. So this is the 50th year I've been teaching now. And I started on my journey and I went back and I took a GED and I somehow guessed and passed that. And I started to go back to school and I failed at first. And then I made a commitment that I was going to start reading dictionaries and increase my vocabulary and learn how to read. And with the help of my mom, I just learned how to read slowly but surely and started passing school, then started excelling and teaching. Whatever I was learning, I would to share with somebody else. And I just loved it. And I never stopped. And here I am now. I've spoken in about 170 countries. And I'm still going 50 years later.
It's incredible. And I know you've studied over 30,000 books. I remember at the Pendulum Summit, Keith Cunningham was another speaker there and he gave you his book and you had finished it by the time you were on stage to speak. And he made reference to it in his speech. He was like, Dr. DeMartini's down there and he just devoured my book and that's why he is who he is. And it's just such an inspirational thing. And I've been a big fan of your books. The one that I've gone over that has pages and markups and highlights is the values factor that made me see the world in a very different way in the way I was living my life. And you know, the subtitle of that for people listening is The Secret to Creating an Inspired and Fulfilling Life. But you say, and I've heard you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you very rarely do a presentation or write an article where you don't talk about values, because values are the foundation of human behavior. Talk to us about the importance of values.
Yeah. Well, every human being, regardless of their age, gender, spectrum, culture, lives moment by moment by a set of priorities, a set of values, things that are most to least important to that individual, that's unique, fingerprint specific. And whatever is highest on that list of values, they are spontaneously inspired to fulfill. You know, like a young boy loves his video games. He doesn't have to be motivated to do his video games. He just does them. I don't need motivation to do teaching. I teach every day. I research, write, and teach every day. So whatever is highest on your value is an intrinsically driven calling to do something that you want, that's fulfilling, that is inspiring to do, that you can't wait to get up and do. But as you go down the list of values, they become more extrinsic and you need external motivation, reward to do it, punishment if you don't do it, to get you to do it. And that's where motivation comes in. Motivation is a symptom, never a solution for maximizing human awareness. And so I'm not a motivational speaker. That's a rhetorical persuasion of somebody else's values onto you to try to get you to be somebody you're not, inauthentically. I want to find out what is intrinsically a drive inside you that your life demonstrates spontaneously, that you can't wait to get up in the morning and do, that is of value to other people, that it serves other people. And that's where you're going to excel. And that's why knowing your values, on my website, drdmartini.com, I have a value determination process. It's free. It's private. I hope that everybody will go and take advantage of it. It's 30 minutes of their time, but it'll be eye-opening because it's going to make you look at what your life really demonstrates as valuable, not what you fantasize, but what your life demonstrates as valuable. Your life demonstrates what your hierarchy of values are because you're making decisions. Every decision you make, every perception, decision, and action you take is based on these values, and it's based on what you believe will give you the greatest advantage or disadvantage in that moment. So knowing that can give you an unbelievable advantage compared to people that are just kind of wallowing around and not knowing what's really important to them and trying to fit in and appease and compare themselves to others and try to be somebody they're not and envy and imitate and live in the shadows of people and then the herd instinct instead of actually being heard by being an individual on a mission. So that's why values are so crucial. And that's why I teach the program, The Breakthrough Experience, to help people identify that and to structure their life accordingly. Because if you're not doing what's highest in priority, you devalue yourself. Anytime you do low priority things, you devalue yourself. Anytime you do the very highest, you get inspired and your self-worth goes up and your net worth goes up.
Yeah, I'm 100% going to come back to the breakthrough experience as we go along. And you mentioned there about the hierarchical values. Sorry, we had the background there on the ship. Just for everybody listening, you're on a cruise ship at the minute, Dr. DeMartinez. We're recording this podcast, so I can hear some of the cruise stuff. With the values and not knowing and people struggling to find their values, why do you think that is? I'm going to link up what you mentioned there, the test for people, as you said, 30 minutes in their life, that's potentially going to give them clarity for the next 30 years. But why do you think we struggle so much to find out our values? Or why does it just happen by default? I had a lot of junk values myself, just things that were happening on automatic that your book brought awareness to. Why do you think we struggle so much with finding our values?
Thousands of years ago, when human beings were nomadic, they say, you didn't do so well on your own. Not everybody was proficient in everything that was needed to survive. And so what happened is you start to get into families and kinship and townships and communities and cities and started developing society. Gradually, specializations occurred. Hey, I'm good at weaving. You're good at farming. You're good at building furniture. You're good at hunting. And everybody starts doing things. And we became more and more dependent on other people, and more frightened of not having access to the people and not fitting into the group. So that was a benefit because it made it more efficient and it allows us to be our specialist. But at the same time, it also made us dependent on a group and the fear of banishment, the fear of exile, the fear of rejection by society. And so now that's an instinct in most people to not fit in. And you got to realize this, if you try to fit into the greatest herd, you're probably not ever going to get heard because if you look very carefully, less than 1% of the Nobel Prize winners, less than 1% of the great billionaires, less than 1%, you know, become the great Olympic medalists, less than 1% become the great spiritual leaders, business leaders, intellectual leaders, etc. So the herd is kind of where the average is. And so if you're basically frightened about rejection from the collective, instead of walking the path of an unborrowed visionary, and being an individual that may be ridiculed, violently opposed, but yet self-evident, if you stick to the principles that stand the test of time, you're probably going to be the average person instead of the extraordinary person. As Steve Jobs said, it's the misfits that make a difference. It's the unborrowed visionaries that leave their mark in the world and transform it. Margaret Mead said, you know, never underestimate the significance of a small group of people for changing the world. It's the only thing that ever changed the world is a small group of people run by somebody who had a vision that didn't fit the norm. How are you going to make a difference trying to fit in? You're only going to make a difference standing out. So finding out what the highest value is in a hierarchy of values, which is unique to you, and then prioritizing your life and delegating the rest and liberating yourself from the drained, bondage of having to do stuff that's uninspiring is absolutely empowering. And I'm absolutely certain that it works. I mean, I help thousands and thousands of people in the breakthrough experience. No doubt in my mind that that's a key to excelling. And if you look very carefully, you'll find that the absolute top of the line leaders in every field, they have learned directly or indirectly, conscious or unconsciously, how to do that.
Yeah, the opening on the website, on your webpage has a great life is not by accident, it's built on purpose. Talk to us about building a great life on purpose.
Well, your highest value is the path of your purpose. Your highest value, Aristotle called the telos, which means the end in mind. Which is the study of the teleology is the study of meaning and purpose. It is the most meaningful, the most purposeful, the most inspiring, most fulfilling thing a human being can do. The most fulfilling purpose and inspiring thing for me is teaching. I love it. I'm a teacher. My identity, my ontological identity revolves around my highest value. My epistemological search and mastery of learning revolves around the highest values. My teleological purpose revolves around my highest value. It's the primary objective that runs the path, you might say. It's the most efficient, effective pathway to fulfill the greatest amount of voids that bring the most fulfillment in life. And it is the thing where we are spontaneously inspired to act, where we have the least amount of resistance and the most amount of resiliency because we're most objective. The moment we live by our highest values, the blood glucose and oxygen goes into the forebrain and activates the executive center or the gratitude center, where we mitigate the volatilities of the impulses and instincts and distractions and allow us to get really focused and inspired. And that's where we get meaning out of things. When we have an objective view, it's a neutral view. We don't fear the loss of things we seek with impulses. We don't fear the gain of the things we're trying to avoid with instincts. We just become present with intuition and inspiration to guide ourselves to do something extraordinary that equitably serves with sustainable fair exchange other people. That's where power is. That's what I love helping people do in the Breakthrough Experience. And that's why I tell people to go online and do the value determination process.
You've given me a very unintentional segue there, because I wasn't going to ask this, but one of the articles that I read in preparation, because I did a deep dive, again, I follow your content through Facebook Live and Instagram Live as we go along anyways, but for the podcast, I did a bit of a deep dive and I came across the Thrive article that you did. Are you a slave to your passion or a master of your mission? And as somebody who connects with your message from the passion side, I used to be a primary school teacher. So the job that felt like a job to me, like, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't my calling. It wasn't my passion. What I do now, writing books, speaking to people like yourself and people who inspire me, it's the thing I jump out of bed every morning for. But when I read that article, it got me thinking, can you talk to us a little bit about that? Are you a slave to your passion or a master of your mission?
Well, most people out there, for some reason, since the book came out, I think in 1985, The Passion for Excellence or whatever, you know, when that came out, the word passion got changed. Originally, if you go look up the etymology of passion, it takes you to pati, P-A-T-I, and passio, P-A-S-S-E-O, which means to suffer. Most people say, find your passion, get your passion, get some passion, have compassion. I don't focus on passion. I think passion, if you look at what it meant ungoverned, uncontrolled, impulsive, compulsive, addictive behavior. It was the id of Freud, the idiot, which is a person that was living in an immediate gratifying needs of impulse. A mission is different than a passion. A mission is something that's deeply meaningful, that is a calling that you feel that you want to contribute to, that you can't wait to get up in the morning and do. But a passion is an impulse. And sometimes people confuse immediate gratifying passions. It's just like the difference between an infatuation and love. True love embraces both sides of people. Infatuation only sees one side and is blind to the downside, like Michael Douglas in, you know, Fatal Attraction. That's an infatuation, and that's an impulse. And impulses can mislead us. I was just watching a Charlie Munger little video he talked about investing, and he said that impulses and compulses and that amygdala response is probably the number one thing that stops people from being wealthy. And that's exactly what I found, too. If you want to be a fortunate individual and have long-term investment strategies, you need to find that highest value, the mission that you feel called to do that gives you long-term insight. Seneca, the Roman poet and politician, said very clearly that you measure an individual by their most distant ends. How big a vision do they have? How far do they have patience? How are they willing to endure pain and pleasure in the pursuit of what's deeply meaningful to them? That's the sign of a mission. You know, I've been doing teaching, like I said, I started in 1972 and I met Paul Bragg. I started teaching 1973. You know where it is now. Next year, we're in the 50th year now of teaching. So I've been doing this a long time, and it's not something that is a little impulse. It's your short-term thing. I've been doing this, and I will probably do it. As Charlie Munger, when he asked, how long will you be investing? He says, until my body won't allow me to. I will probably do the same with teaching. I can't imagine myself not doing it. It's what I love doing. Why would I do anything less than what I love doing? It doesn't make any sense. People ask me, what do you do to chill out? I said, I don't need to chill out. I've delegated everything else that is uninspiring to other people who would be loving to do that. And I get on with doing what I love doing. So you don't need to chill out. You don't get bored or burned out doing what you love.
It reminds me another article that I read, the Jet Set magazine. Now, I know you talk about this a lot, about choosing your challenges and the power of only those that inspire you. And I think that's exactly what I'm getting from you there. It's something that you would do for free. It makes you jump out of bed every morning. From your experience with the thousands and millions at this stage, Dr. DeMartini, of the people you've helped, a lot of people will rewire the way they see challenges. And I couldn't agree more. I've used the language, choose your suffering. You use the language, choose your challenges, because it's effectively, how do you want life to live and what terms you want to live on? A lot of people struggle for inspiration, and you're much better able to speak to this as someone with, you know, 5 decades of speaking to people on it. With inspiration, is it highly linked to not being clear on their values? Or do you find that people confuse inspiration, motivation, values, and they're all just mixed up in this kind of pool of ideas that people don't know how to distinguish? Why do you think they struggle so much with it?
I think you just said it nicely. They haven't made a distinction between an intrinsic value and an extrinsic value. An extrinsic value is something that needs a reward to get you to do it, or a punishment to to get you to stop doing something else. And if you have to have that, you haven't found your mission. if you need a motivator on the outside, and you need to be stopped and governed from the outside, I always say people who live by their highest values are intrinsically governed. Their executive center, the executive center has fibers from the medial prefrontal cortex down into the amygdala, and uses glutamate and GABA neurotransmitters and N-acetyl-aspartate. They literally do it and dampen the volatilities of these distractions in people's lives. You can literally see the neurochemistry of this. So if you live by your highest priorities, that the functional MRIs show blood glucose and oxygen going into the forebrain and calming down the volatilities of the emotions which distract you. And those are all the things, the quick get rich schemes and the failure feelings. All those volatilities are all got byproducts of living by lower values. The more you're not fulfilling your highest values, the more volatile you become. That's exactly what Buffett was saying and Munger was saying in this video. They said it they were right on track with it. That's why most people don't get wealthy. Majority of people don't get wealthy. Less than 1% do it. That everybody fantasizes about being financially independent. I've stood in 5,000 people at a success summit in Johannesburg one time and asked, how many of you want to be financially independent? Everybody put their hands and legs in the air. I said, how many of you are financially independent and have passive income exceeding active income and don't have to work anymore? All the hands went down except 7 hands out of 5,000 people. I said, interesting, everybody here says they want that. But I'm going to tell you right now, no, you don't. And they went, what? I said, no, you don't. Your life doesn't demonstrate it. Your life demonstrates that you want immediate gratification. You want to buy consumables that depreciate in value, and you want a quick fix, and you want to live beyond your means, and you want to buy things to keep up with the Joneses, and you're not actually willing to be patient for long-term outcomes by buying true assets on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. When you're willing to do that, your money's going to start working for you. Until that, you're going to be working for it. And I woke them up, because as long as you live in the delusion of the fantasy, instead of get grounded about what you really value, you're going to bang your head against the wall. And gee, by now, I thought I'd be. What's wrong with me? Why am I sabotaging? Why am I having limiting beliefs? And all those other self-help, you know, nomenclatures that are out there. But all of those are symptoms of not knowing what you really value, and either changing your values to really want to build wealth, or to set up a realistic expectation, it's not for me. I've done evaluations on over 100 billionaires. I've done evaluations of values on people that are poor and anywhere in between, centimillionaires, decamillionaires, you name it, pentamillionaires. And I guarantee you there's a hierarchy of values showing that outcome. People that have a tremendous value on building wealth and making contributions, serving people and investing long-term, those are the ones that have the money. And the people that don't, I guarantee you they're not going to end up with it. And it doesn't matter how much you make. It has everything to do with how you manage it. What you manage it is based on your values. I just happened to have a shift at age 27 that shifted my values. And I started buying assets. And I'm a net buyer. I don't ever sell them. I just buy them. I just keep buying and buying and buying. Now they're making me tons of money. And that's because I invested in assets and gave up immediate gratification for a long-term outcome. And now I can't say I live a bad life. I'm living on the number one largest yacht on the planet, traveling around the world. I got to surf in Ecuador this morning. That's because of patience. And that's because of methodical dedication to service and focus and doing something that you can't wait to get up in the morning and do. That does make a difference in your life.
And I think it connects across boards. Like for people that are into other areas, fitness, health, wellness, it's the exact same thing. That delaying gratification, getting clear on your higher value, what's sustainable, what is it you want to do? It transcends into all different areas. I'm curious, Dr. DeMartini, because this is something because I've read several of your books, listened to them as well. A lot of them are on audio. A lot of people who are listening here, big fans of audiobooks. But a question that came up time and time again that I was dying to ask you is, do you think there's ever a time and a place for extrinsic motivation? Do you think it has to be intrinsic and coming from inside all the time? Or if you get your values aligned, is it a case that you just don't need to focus on any extrinsic or external motivation or values? What's your kind of thought on that as someone that's from a selfish standpoint wants to kind of pick your brain on it?
Well, when you hire people, nobody goes to work for the sake of a company. They go to work to fulfill what they value most. If they can't see how the job descriptions and the mission, vision, and primary objectives of the company are helping them fulfill their highest values, they're not going to be engaged. So if you go to school and a kid goes to school and they can't see how the classes they're taking are going to help them fulfill what's meaningful to them, they're not going to be engaged. They're going to be disobedient. They're going to be called attention deficit. They're going to be living labels. If you're in a relationship and you can't see how the relationship you're with is helping you fulfill your highest values, you're disengaged and it's on its way out. So the values are absolutely the fundamental to every relationship dynamic and the mastery of all areas of life's spiritual quest. If you're not living by highest values, don't expect an inspired spiritual life. If you're sitting there and you want to wake up your genius, go and pursue challenges that inspire you and watch how your genius innovates and creates original ideas that serve human beings. You want to have a stable business? Live by your highest values where you're more objective and more sustainable and fair exchange. If not, I guarantee you, you're going to have a narcissistic or altruistic spin on what you're doing and trying to get something for nothing off your customer, try to give something for nothing and sacrifice profits. Every area of life is impacted by being objective and living by highest values. People can come up with all kind of BS, but that's the cornerstone. I've been studying it 50 years. That's a cornerstone of mastery of life. So yeah, in your physiology, absolutely what you said, when you're living in your highest values, it governs the autonomics. The medial prefrontal cortex sits right in front of the third ventricle and right in front of the hypothalamus, the suprachiasmic nucleus, which runs the circadian rhythms and runs the hormones and runs the autonomics and even runs the cerebellar function. And what that does is it actually makes sure that you have an autonomic equilibrium, a metabolic equilibrium and a homeostasis that's maximal. And the second you go down into the subcortical areas of into the amygdala, you start polarizing and lateralizing and start having fight or flight excesses or rest and digest excesses, which throws ghrelin and leptin hormones off on eating. And you'll tend to, when you're under distress, because anytime you're infatuated, you're going to fear the loss of what you're infatuated with. Anytime you're resentful to something, you're going to fear its gain. And anytime you're living in fear and you're down in your survival mentality with the amygdala, I guarantee you, you're going to overeat or undereat because of the distress. And you'll have a volatility and a subjective bias in your reality perceptions and your actions.
That's so I could not word that in more incredible way. Something I struggle with, I know a lot of people listening are similar. I used to have binge eating patterns where, you know, binge restrict cycles a lot when I was working as a teacher, 100% for being out of alignment with what I was supposed to be doing. And it speaks.
We're inspired.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was when it. You're not fulfilled, you try to fill yourself full with food, with drugs, with sugar, with porn, with sex, you know, drugs, whatever it is. Those are compensated. Those are all symptoms of an unfulfilled life. When people are inspired by what they're doing, they don't do that. They're too busy making a difference, because the most fulfilling thing a human being does something that serves another individual, that brings fulfillment and sustains fair exchange. That's what brings fulfillment. If you ask people, I've done millions of people, how many of the most fulfilling moment in their life is when they did something that contributed to somebody else's life, that person said thank you, and they had a sustainable fair exchange and transaction that was fair. And you can't wait to get up and continue that. They can't wait to keep getting it. That's what creates big business. That's what creates great fulfillment, economics, stability. And when you're doing that, you're not sitting there overeating. You're too busy making a difference.
So true. It reminds me of the line, I can't remember who the quote is attributed to, that you find yourself when you lose yourself in the service of others. And I can speak wholeheartedly to what you've just said in terms of how it impacted my behavior based on waking up every day inspired and motivated isn't the right word. I have a very love-hate relationship similar to you with motivation and motivational and how people interpret that word, but inspired I think is a better one. This is going to sound like a little bit of a sharp left turn, but I loved a recent Instagram live that you did. I know it was covered probably on Facebook as well, but it was through Instagram. I was watching it where you were talking about unrealistic expectations leading to frustration, and that there's a series of common unrealistic expectations that are the ABCDEFs of negativity. But can you explore how unrealistic expectations lead to frustration with people?
Anytime you're in your amygdala, you're going to want to avoid pain and seek pleasure. You're going to want to avoid pain and seek pleasure. You want to avoid challenge and seek support. You want to avoid mean and seek nice. You're going to be polarized. Imagine having a magnet, and on both poles of the magnet is positive and negative, kind and cruel, nice and mean, positive, you know, polarities. So when you're down in your amygdala, you're trying to divide those two, separate the two, and try to get one side. Now, if you try to take a magnet and cut it in half and get only the positive part of the magnet, how successful you'll be. If you slice it in half, you're going to get a positive negative and a positive negative. You're not going to get one separate from the other. So the addiction to one-sidedness, polarity of a monopole, we called it, is what creates a bipolar condition, an unstable, volatile condition of the mind. Most people are addicted to the fantasy of one-sidedness. I want nice without mean. I want kind without cruel. I want positive without negative. I want generous without stingy. I want peace without war. Nowhere in history has that been. Even the Global Peace Index, a peace of war, is balanced on the planet, whether people realize it or not. They don't want to face that, but it's balanced. And the same thing with somebody you love. When you're actually with somebody, you're going to find out maybe in the first 6 weeks or maybe 6 months, you might have somebody you think, oh my God, I'm so infatuated with them. I'm blind to the downside. I only see the positives. But give it 6 months and sooner or later, you're going to find out that, oh my God, they've got traits I had not seen initially, like Fatal Attraction, the movie with Michael Douglas. But eventually you discover, well, they got things you like and things you dislike. When you're able to embrace both of those equally and know that is who you're dealing with and you love that, now you can love. Otherwise, you're in a fantasy of an infatuation. And anytime you have an expectation for one individual to be one-sided, the other side's going to smack you and it's going to be distressful because you're trying to avoid it. So the difference between embracing both sides and appreciating the challenge versus trying to avoid the challenge and getting smacked by it is the difference between eustress, which is wellness promoting, and distress, which is illness promoting. And so the unrealistic expectation of getting one-sided outcomes without the other, or getting a fantasy without the nightmare, is the difference between setting a fantasy as a goal instead of a real objective. An objective embraces both sides simultaneously and knows you're going to have to both sides. You don't go to Mars as Elon Musk going, I just want the positive. I don't want the negative. I don't want to think it could crash. I don't want to think it could this. That's ridiculous. It's childish. It's immature. It's fantasy. And those are unrealistic expectations that lead to frustrations and nightmares. So if you want to love somebody, you want to love yourself, you want to have loving objectives that you actually obtain, embrace both sides. The Stoics understood this, market realists emphasize this, and it's still true today. So I'm a firm believer of going after what you're highest on your value, where you're most objective, and objectivity means neutral, where you embrace both sides of life and are willing to embrace pain and pleasure in the pursuit of what's meaningful to you. In fact, Aristotle said it very carefully in his old times on the golden mean, the true virtue between the two vices, which were excess and deficiency. Anything he saw that had an excess of positive and a deficient negative, or an excess of negative, a deficient of positive, were the vices. They were the distractions, just as Charlie Munger just said. And the second you put the two and embrace both together, you have the mean. And that is where you get meaning out of life. Extracting meaning out of your existence is to be able to take and find the negatives in the positives and find the positives in the negatives and know that they're there and don't be blind and ignorant of one side and embrace both sides in the pursuit of something truly meaningful. And that's the difference. Otherwise, you're going to have the ABCDs of negativity, anger and aggression, blame and betrayal, criticism and challenge, despair and depression, desire to exit and escape, frustration, futility, grouchiness and grief, hatred and hurt, irritability and insanity. Those are all signs that lead to depression. Depression is a comparison of your current reality to a fantasy of a one-sided world that you're addicted to.
Wow, that's and so true. As someone that struggled with it myself for periods of my life, it was always when I had that misalignment. For those who are listening to this, you literally clasped one hand over the other in terms of an alignment with higher values. And I always found that my most depressive states came when I was just so far away from what my calling was, so far from authentic self, true self, and what I should have been doing. And you're just ignoring it and you're drowning it out with alcohol, or in my case, alcohol, drugs, sex, all of these things, because you're not feeling inspired. You're not feeling fulfilled. And you're masking it, as you said, trying to fill that void. And again, I think that's why your message connects so much with me. With negativity, Dr. DeMartini, do you think it's a useful thing for people to explore? Because you mentioned there, you know, the ABCDEFs of negativity and how the unrealistic expectations lead to that frustration. Negativity is one of those that, similar to what you said there, I try and take the positive, more of a reframing than anything with negativity. But do you think negativity has a place when it comes to effectively being plots on a map for somebody finding their journey or finding what they should be doing with their life's journey? Where do you think it
absolutely
comes in?
If people think they're going to get rid of something like that, when you finally embrace both sides, you embrace the negativity and the positivity, the two sides of a magnet. If you try to get only one side, the other side's going to smack you uncontrolled. Negativity is a feedback mechanism to let you know you're addicted to positivity. If you're addicted to praise, criticism hurts. If you're addicted to protection, aggression hurts. If you're addicted to nice, mean hurts. It doesn't hurt when you embrace both sides. It only hurts when you're addicted to one side. So pleasure, if you're addicted to pleasure, pain hurts. But when you embrace it, Anaxagoras wrote this 2,560 years ago. He wrote about then. He said that pain and pleasure are lopsided perceptions. That was his words. He understood that those are illusions. They're associations you make in the brain. That's why John Milton said it very nicely. The mind has the ability to make a heaven out of a hell or a hell out of a heaven. There are no positive or negative events out there. There's just events. You choose to bring to that event your subjective bias and your interpretation of your reality. And you're accountable for your reality. And if you really are accountable, you're going to balance it. And if you're not accountable, you're going to assume that the world out there is doing things to you. And you're going to be a victim of history instead of master of destiny. It's nothing to do with the world out there. It has everything to do with what your perception of the world out there. And you have control of your perceptions because you can ask new questions and make you aware of what you are unconscious of and see both sides. I do that every week in the Breakthrough Experience, teach people how to do that so they can liberate themselves from all the friggin' baggage that they're running their stories with. People want to run their story. I stop them in their story and I said, let's find the other side, balance it. And the story changes. And then they say, thank you. The only story I'm interested in is thank you. I love you. The rest of it's all BS. It's all just BS.
I love that line, victim of history versus master of destiny. I think that's a very powerful way to see it. Talk about the Breakthrough Experience. As I said, something that's life-changing, the work you're doing, who, as somebody who's seen you speak, who's read several of your books, the Breakthrough Experience, the next, obviously being on my list off the back of this conversation for sure. Talk to us about the Breakthrough Experience. Who is it for? And what are some of the things that people can expect if they go through it?
Well, the Breakthrough Experience is something I've done now over 33 years. And I've done it 1,144 times. So I keep records of it. And it's a two-day experience where I'm just doing everything I can to help people break through whatever they think is in the way of a fulfilling life. And I don't know what that's going to be. We're definitely going to be determining values. We're definitely going to look at what it is. We're going to definitely look how they're structuring your life, how to prioritize, how to delegate. We're definitely going to be using the DeMartini method on dissolving emotional baggage, pride, shames, infatuation, resentments, griefs, all the emotional stuff, and show you how to ask questions to neutralize it so none of that's in the way. It's all on the way. And how and why that's created, how we create that, how we dissolve it. I give you just gems on how to transform your life and allow you to get inspired by your life. And there's nothing out there stopping you from an inspired life, nothing. I don't care what you've been. I had a young boy, he came to the program and he says, well, my therapist, you know, sometimes I want to choke some of the therapists because I want to go and promote victim mentality. And the therapist said, well, because my mother abandoned me, that's why I'm doing this and that's why I'm that. It was just blame on the outside. And now the solution is some sort of a treatment out there. That's a disempowered life. I said, look, so what happened to you? He said, well, my mom abandoned me. And I said, okay, great. And I said, you know how to use the internet? He says, yeah. You know how to use a computer? Yeah. You know how to go on Google? Good. Look something up. The most famous people in history who were orphans and abandoned. And there's 700 friggin' of the most powerful people that have ever lived on the planet in that list. And I showed them to him and I had him go through there. And if he didn't know who they are, we looked up their names and what they accomplished. His eyes lit up. He says, they started out like me. And I said, exactly. Don't let some friggin' psychologist put you in a box and say you're a victim of history when you can be a master of destiny by taking that experience in your life and turning it into a gold mine. These people started out the same way. Sir Isaac Newton, one of the guys that created Principia and one of the greatest things on gravity. His father died when he was born. His mother gave him up as a little child temporarily and then wanted him to be a farmer instead of a genius, right? So it has nothing to do with that. It's what he decided to do with it. So people can come up with all kind of BS excuses and they can blame all day long, but you're never going to empower your life with blaming things on the outside and putting a cause out there as the cause of my problems. And then you're going to give a cause out there to solve it. And politicians, religions feed off that with the opium of the masses. If you want to master your life, you got to take those situations and find out how is all those experiences in my life on the way. Anything you can't say thank you for is baggage. Anything you can say thank you for is fuel. In the Breakthrough Experience, I show you how to take whatever's happened in your life and turn it on the way as fuel so you can be grateful for your life and get clear about your mission and prioritize your life and delegate things and get on with your life. I'm interested in helping people master life. That's been my dream since I was literally 18 to help people master life and 17 to teach that. You're just warming me up now.
Yeah, the motivation, like you're lighting a fire within me. I can literally feel it coming up from within inside me. Like you're speaking to the greatest part of my greatness or my soul when you're speaking like that. And I just, again, I know time wise and short on time, and for everybody listening, the breakthrough experience, like, it sounds like it's going to be one of those life changing things. I've been following your work for years, Dr. Giamartini, and it's had such a powerful impact on me internally, externally in the world, and some of the things that I've done and the reasons to why I'm doing it. As I said, asking that question on the value was a life changer for me. I was just walking around blindly, like literally was like I was sleepwalking through life when I was running and not being clear of what my highest values were. And I have only a couple of more things that I want to touch on. And as I said, I will link all the books. I'll link the Breakthrough Experience. I'll link everything in the show notes for people. So I highly recommend you go and check it out and take control of your life now. Don't be a victim of history. Be a master of destiny. But Dr. Giamartini, you've been doing this for 5 decades and you've given us so much here. But I'm curious, as someone who's had a huge impact on me personally and the world as a whole, like that guy you spoke about and the thousands and millions at this point of people, what's the message you want left after, in many, many years when you're gone? What's the message you would like to have on your gravestone or on your tombstone when that time comes and long into the future?
I have a posthumous biography of how I want my life to be. I've got an obituary already written and everything else. I've got all that laid out. It's done. But something that initiated and inspired me when I was 18, I asked my mom, what exactly is a genius? Because Paul Bragg told me to say I'm a genius and I apply my wisdom every day. He said, if you say that every single day, sooner or later, the cells of your body will tingle with it, so will the world. So I started saying it. And then I asked my mom, what exactly is a genius? She said, well, people like Albert Einstein and Da Vinci. I said, well, then get me every book that's ever been written about them or from them. I want to start devouring it. One of the things I learned from that is, and I'm paraphrasing a bit, but Albert Einstein said the greatest teacher is exemplification. So my mission was to exemplify a masterful and inspired life. That's it. So I designed, you can live a life by design or you can live by duty, ontologically or deontologically. I'm interested in living by design, to lay out real goals in real times that have real meaning, that are inspiring to you, that you're not going to hesitate on doing, you're going to take actions on. Get rid of the fluff and the stuff that's distracting from that and get on with what it is and structure it and you live life that way. I wanted to demonstrate that that's humanly possible for people by living it and empowering all 7 areas of my life. I wanted to create original ideas that serve human beings around the planet and original ideas. I know that the Giamartini method is absolutely original idea that's never been out there in history. I know some of the value applications are. I also want to create a global business, which I've been blessed to do. We have students in every country around the world today. I want to be financially independent, which I've been blessed to do. I want to have a global family, which I do. I want to have a social influence and meet most amazing people on the planet that have global influence, 4,000 of them now. I want to have a vital, energized body. I'm going on 68 soon. And so I'm doing more energy. I just surfed this morning and like a teenager.
You haven't aged. You haven't aged in 15 years. To
give context. I want to be able to go and be an inspiring movement for people. You know, not a religion, and not something to subordinate, not some hero villain fantasy person out there that you're supposed to subordinate to. I want you to realize that divine nature inside you, you can live and express on this planet, and that is a movement I wanted to create on the planet. So I'm a firm believer that you can do that, and my life's demonstrating that. So to me, that's the message that I want to leave on the planet, that you can exemplify an inspired life, a deeply meaningful life, if you follow the principles that stand the test of time. And it's not rocket science. In fact, it's so simple, people don't believe it's that simple.
What an amazing way to finish. So inspiring and an absolute pleasure for me, Dr. Giamartini. For everybody listening, where's the best place for them to connect with you, to follow online? I'll obviously link up the website. Is it directly on the website? Is there any social media channels? Facebook, Instagram?
Well, all the social medias. You can go to my podcast, Dr. Giamartini Podcast Show, Dr. Giamartini Show. You can go there. You can go on the website. But on the website, all that's available. So just start browsing the website. See where it is. Go into the media section. There's thousands of articles and newspapers and podcasts. Go to the book section or YouTube section. Take advantage of it. It's a massive amount of information that you can educate with thousands of articles on there for people.
And just to give context from the business standpoint, I love this. I just need to give it and for people listening and for you, you put across the content in all the different ways. So sometimes there's a video, which is a link to a podcast or audio, which is written and transcribed into a blog. So regardless of how you like to consume information, for those of you listening, it's all there. You can read it, you can listen to it, you can watch it. So that's why I think it's so easy for people to get into the content and do a deep dive into it. So I highly recommend, as a call to action, go and do that off the back of this podcast. You won't regret it. Literally, as Dr. DeMartini has said, don't be a victim of history, be a master of destiny. Take that action step. Dr. DeMartini, the pleasure has been, I've been so grateful to have this conversation and have this time with you. Thank you for all you do, for the inspiration you provide, and for the message you have as someone who, again, is from afar, the other side of the world at the minute when you're beside Ecuador, getting so much value from it. So thank you so much for me, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity to be on your show.
There you have it, Dr. John DeMartini on why inspiration is not motivation, how unrealistic expectations leads to frustration, and why your highest values lead to an inspiring life. As I mentioned at the top of this podcast, my brain was on overdrive for this one, and I'm looking forward to listening back myself and doing my 3 email takeaway. For those of you who are in my email newsletter, every Thursday I send out my top 3 takeaways from that week's podcast. You can sign up to that on the website, briankeenfitness.com. And yeah, I'm going to have to let this one decompress a little bit from this one and think about some of the things that connected and landed with me that Dr. DeMartini was speaking about in today's podcast. So I hope you enjoyed it. As always, if you did, be sure to take a screenshot, pop it up on your Instagram stories, and you can tag my handle, Brian_Keen_fitness, and Dr. DeMartini's handle on there. That's all for me for this week. Catch you all next Monday.